This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to Wells Tech. This is episode 446 for May 24th, 2016. My name is Martin Spriggs, and you've joined a show about technology and ministry. And helping me discuss the ins and outs of all those possibilities, perhaps for your ministry, as usual, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, how are you today?
I am just awesome, Martin. How are you this afternoon?
Excellent. Enjoying some unseasonably warm weather here in Wisconsin for May. It's in the low 80s. I could take that each and every day, but I fear it will not last the entire month.
Excited to talk technology with one of my favorite technology guys, but not just one, but two of my favorite technology guys, because today we have a guest host, Jason Schmidt, joining us from Omaha, Nebraska. Welcome, Jason.
Hey, Jason. Hey. Good to see you, Martin and Sally. I'm glad to be a part.
RCTC, semi-regular classroom technology correspondent.
There you go. It took me a little bit to process that. That was good.
5 years to come up with that, too. Really appreciate you bringing your sunshine our way. And when people see Jason, they know we're going to talk about classroom technology. And we had a lot to choose from, always with Jason, because he's always got his robots and his 3D printing. And we thought we'd kind of push all that together and kind of come up with a general theme that talked about what do you do when the rainy days come and you need to find some fun activities, but educational activities. Maybe you want to take the kids outside on a sunny day like today, or you're cooped up inside. What kind of projects are out there that involve technology but can keep the kids both entertained and educated? How about that?
Yeah, that's one of the things too, like with my kids in particular, you know, they keep on saying all summer, you know, hear that phrase, right? I'm bored. What do I do? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not good enough anymore to, you know, a lot of times you can't just say, give a kid a ball.
Read a book.
Okay.
Like our parents told us.
Yeah. Hey, I read a book. I already read today. We need to do something, you know, or you can't just throw them a ball and say, oh, go for a bike ride, you know, right up to the gas station and buy a candy bar. You know, I don't care. That's, you know, that kind of thing doesn't happen so often anymore. So, you know, this is one of those things as we were kind of getting ready for the show. It's like, you know, how do you take advantage of the nice weather? And, you know, just because you're into technology and stuff doesn't mean you have to be pasty like me. You know, let's get outside. let's catch some rays and build up that tan and get some endurance too. So really excited to talk about this topic and bring in some of these ideas.
So why don't we start outdoors? How about some thoughts from your experiences that are good things that you can kind of put in front of kids that would primarily be outdoor kinds of things?
Sure. Well, you know, for me, one of the first things that I thought of is geocaching. That's been something that's been around for a very long time. You know, I first heard about geocaching probably 7 or 8 years ago. And it's gotten a lot easier now since we have these wonderful devices that we get to carry around that have GPS built into them, and also these apps where we can find these different caches. So, you know, that's a great way to get out, get some exercise, and, you know, do some exploring in places that you may not necessarily have had the opportunity to visit anymore. I know, Sally, do you do any geocaching, or have you done geocaching before?
Yeah, definitely. Our family has done geocaching, and we've done it at church events as well. So the concept is that people hide things outdoors, typically all over the world. There are these hidden treasures. Oftentimes they're like a film canister or something fairly small, a little Tupperware container or whatever, and they post the coordinates, latitude and longitude, on the geocaching.com website. And so with the mobile app, like you mentioned, with my smartphone, I can open up the geocaching website. It'll recognize where I am, and it'll show me maps, basically, to where these geocaches are hidden. We did it on a church picnic out at the local state park, and there were geocaches hidden in the state parks. Actually, all the state parks in Minnesota have geocaches hidden in them, and many, many other places as well. But just a lot of fun. It does kind of teach some map skills if you're doing it with a group of people. There's a collaborative effort to it, you know, somebody's holding the phone or the GPS device or whatever it is and leading the way. But it never fails that when you get to the destination, you're just kind of in the general vicinity, and then everybody needs to kind of kick in and actually find the box. Sometimes they can be real cleverly hidden. Okay, so I have to tell you a little story. One of the things people do is they hide them typically in like Walmart parking lots under lampposts. So there's a little cover over the bolts of a lamppost, and it slides up and down on the pole, and people will put a film canister underneath there. And they call those lamppost caches. They're kind of like no-brainers. If it's pointing you towards a Walmart parking lot, you know it's going to be a super easy. But it does add to your numbers you've found. Maybe you just need to find one in a certain state or something you're visiting, and it's a quick and easy find. So our family was vacationing one year down in Alabama, and we ended up tracking down a cache, and it was kind of pointing toward a lamppost. And it wasn't in a Walmart parking lot, but still, it was a lamppost. It was pretty obvious what it was. So I told the boys, you guys can stay in the car. I'll jump out and grab the container. And I slid up the cover on the lamppost, and there was a rat underneath.
Oh, no.
And I screamed, and then I looked. No, I don't think I looked any more closely. I think I got back in the car, and one of my sons got out and saw that it was a stuffed rat. It was very realistic, though, and it had, like, a cache container around its neck, and it scared the bejeebers out of me. But, yeah, you just never know what you're going to find when you're out geocaching.
That's fantastic.
And that's not on video, I suppose.
I hope not. Goodness, yeah. I screamed loud, though. But
maybe
it was
a security camera.
You know, that might be another tech project, is do an IoT kind of a thing with your rat geocache and have it be motion activated so that it takes a video every time that happens.
Wow. Too much technology here. But anyway, you can hide them yourself and, you know, use a GPS or whatever to find some with your classroom, maybe around your school property. There's lots of variations. We've worked puzzles around them, so you have to kind of decipher what the latitude and longitude are from puzzles and things. Lots of ways you could extend this for classroom use.
Yep. And that kind of ties into another one on our list, kind of in the same family. Scavenger hunts are kind of that way, and there are some geocaching approaches that kind of make it more of a guessing game, where there's some educational, you know, process that you have to go through to kind of guess the next spot. And that's the way scavenger hunts are kind of put together. Is there a technology angle to scavenger hunts? How are they done today with the technology of today?
One thing that we used at a conference that I helped to coordinate just not too long ago was an app called Goose Chase. It was really a lot of fun. You post these challenges, people download the app onto their phone, and then there's a leaderboard that goes along with it. So it was things like, you know, take a picture of a board member, or take a picture of the coffee, or, you know, take a video with a vendor or something like that. You know, just these real quick and easy little things that people could do these little tasks, and then be able to kind of upload their evidence and everything, so that they can prove that they did the things that they did. So you know, and it was just so much fun, such an engaging activity. Really had a great time doing that for our conference. Now, when we had 2,500 people there, so we had to pay for it. But if you use it in a smaller setting, you can use it for free with up to 25 people, 5 teams. So, you know, this is a great activity to do, like for you know, like a family activity or a family outing, or you know, maybe it's a faculty and you want to do a team building activity or something along those lines. You know, it's really, really simple to set it up. They have some pre-made challenges that you can use if you'd like, and then, you know, or you can customize them or take a mix and match and do a bunch of things. So you know, it's just a lot of fun, really engaging activity. And I would, you know, I'd encourage people to check that out. So that is Goose Chase.
And I have an example as well. I'm going to just share my screen real quick to show you the behind the scenes of this. But basically, over at MLC, they have something they call Marty's Eye Tour, and I was involved in kind of converting this from a paper-based scavenger hunt to a digital one. And what they do is they use QR codes, so the students would get a clue to a particular location. This one, and it talks about a place where two dorms meet, and that would be over, I think, at Augustana. And when you go over there, the kids would look around and find a QR code posted. So they're using iPads. It has a scanning app. They scan the QR code, and it actually takes them to an online quiz. So on the iPad, they're prompted to answer some scavenger hunt type questions. These are general campus questions and New Ulm type questions. They put in their answers, and then it gives them the next clue. It takes them to another page, another Google Doc that we have online, and that Google Docs gives them the clue to where the next QR code is hidden. So it's just kind of fun for them to control the iPad and do the scanning and see where it takes them and things like that. So I think it's been very well received. It's just an example. You just kind of have to think through your different locations. Generating QR codes is really easy with Google provides even a QR code generator. You can get it with your Chrome browser and make QR codes to anything on the web. And definitely your devices need to have Wi-Fi capabilities or cellular capabilities so that you're connected to do this kind of thing. But it can be a lot of fun.
Now, Jason, at your school, the kids going to bring their own device, right?
Correct.
So they're going to have these. But a lot of our schools, they don't do that. They're, you know, in fact, some of them are prohibited from bringing devices into the classroom, or they have Chromebooks. How would you suggest maybe they approach some of these activities? All the ones we've talked about so far have really required some kind of portable connected device. Are these kind of, you know, off limits then for classrooms that don't have that kind of thing? Or how would you suggest a teacher who wants to get into this get started?
Sure. Well, you know, the QR codes that that Sally was describing, that can be adapted. You could do that with paper and pencil and do things very, very differently with something like that for a classroom mm-hmm. activity. You know, and then something that I did when I was a classroom teacher, I had third and fourth graders, and none of them, you know, and this was 5 years ago, six, 7 years ago now. Oh gosh. but none of those kids had their own device that they could bring or anything like that. So what we ended up doing is we went on a photo scavenger hunt. So you know, parents would come along, and we turned it into a field trip where kids brought, you know, kids and parents had cameras, and you know, they'd be told to, okay, I want you to find a picture. I want you to take a picture of something like this, and I want you to find this. And you know, we had that whole list of 25 different things that they needed to take pictures of, and then the kids would take those pictures, and then we'd go over things when we got back to the classroom. So you know, there are definitely low-tech ways of doing these kinds of things. You know, if you are into things like botany or anything like that, there are ways to, you know, you can go around and collect leaves or collect plants and bring samples back to the your classroom and or back into the house and kind of look at things like that. You know, that's very elementary kind of an activity. So there are just a bunch of things that you could do to take it offline and still, you know, once again, get outside and, you know, soak up some sunshine and get some exercise too.
So a few more in this category. We talked about the advent of drones and how popular they are. And I know some schools are beginning to look into getting drones. There's apps that you can use with your mobile devices to control drones and build drones and things like that. Any kind of real educational connections you can make with drones, Jason? Do you have ideas there?
So one of the things that we, one of the things that we do in our area around here is we use these mini rolling spider drones from Parrot. So I'll share my screen here and show you what those look like. So this is a Parrot mini drone, and it's a rolling spider. And so what these do is they are obviously, you know, they're little devices. You control them with an app. They're about the size, the drone itself is about the size of a Hot Wheels. They're not real large. But the great thing about these is that you can do some really neat coding with them. So we actually pair these with an iPad and we use an app called, I've got to be careful with this one. We have this app called Tickle, and that's the one. This Tickle app, it's free. You download it onto your iPad, and then you connect it with your device, and you can see there are a whole bunch of different devices that it's compatible with.
Spiro, mm-hmm. and BB-8.
Right. And the app is free, like I said, and it's a graphic kind of a user interface, just the same as what you have for Scratch. It's very much the same as Scratch. And then you use that to program these drones to do the things that you want them to do. So they run autonomously for the most part. There are some ways, like I was doing an activity like this with my kids, and my 10-year-old figured out, he's like, you know, he says, I want to control it, Dad. And I said, well, you know, you can't. You have to do a program on there. And I said, but you know, think about how you could solve that problem. You know, I don't have a controller, you have software. What are you going to do? And he kind of thought about it a little bit, and he was like, oh. And he programmed the iPad, so when he tilted it this way, it turned that way. When he tilted it this way, it turned the other way. He shook it and it did a flip. And so, you know, we had all of those things kind of as a part of that. So those little drones are a lot of fun to program, and that would be more of an indoor activity. Those don't do real well outside. But then if you're going to take them outside, you have probably the most popular ones are going to be the Phantom by DJI. The most recent models get to be pretty expensive. You know, you're spending $1,800 for a drone and all of the accessories that go along with it, but the pricing on these things has gone down incredibly. You know, if we scroll down on here, a Phantom 3, which is just one generation behind that shoots in 4K, you can get for $800. Or the original one, the Phantom 2, if you just get the drone, that's going to be $339. So mm-hmm. the pricing on these things has come down quite a bit.
These in an educational context, you know, with the cameras and being able to do aerial photography or whatever, what kind of projects envision, or what kind of things are out there that would make sense?
Sure. Well, some of the things that we're doing in my district is we're tying it to our science class. We have some wetlands by one of our high school, or by our high school, mm-hmm. and it's also a prairie, because we're not going to build anything in there because it's a floodplain. So we, a couple of weeks ago, did a controlled burn on the prairie. So we did some kind of before and after, and then we're also kind of documenting the progress of that as well. So that's one thing that we're using it for. We're also using it for our geography classes. One of their tasks that they do every year is their job is to do a presentation to the superintendent, trying to convince him that a school should be built in a certain location. So as they're doing their scouting, they're looking up information on the county website and then using these drones to get some footage and say, okay, you know, this is how big the area is. These are the other things that are going on around it. And, you know, kind of using that to help build their case. But really, you know, I mean, there's so many things that you can do with these, you know, especially, you know, for a church or a school, you know, a promotional video, you get some activities going on and, you know, just get, you know, of an outdoor activity, you know, what are all of the things that are going on out there, and kind of use that to document it, you know, do some videography and some photography with that, promotional videos, you know, kind of a sweeping shot of your, you know, of your church building, or, you know, even things like another thing that we did was we looked at traffic patterns for when people come to school and where they park and how traffic flows and everything like that. So, you know, rather than just tell people come in the parking lot and stay to the right and then go around to the left, we did a flyby and, you know, showed people this is what it looks like, here's how you go, these are the locations to park, and you know, so, you know, there really are a lot of applications if you just think about it a little bit. It took us a while to get there though.
Very good. Well, I have interest in drones here at our house, and it just reminds me, I was going to tell you guys that if I look a little starry-eyed, it's because it's graduation week, and my son, who's graduating high school, is the drone guy, and he's headed off to University of North Dakota to study engineering. I learned that University of North Dakota has become like the Silicon Valley. Grand Forks is like the Silicon Valley of drones, that there's an Air Force base there that flies drones exclusively, and there's this whole industry built up around it and everything. So he's actually built his own drone. We've been talking about this on the podcast probably for 2 years. It's I've seen it lift off the ground, so he's making progress. But this thing is huge. I mean, the total wingspan is like two feet or something. It's big. And so it's not that little lightweight stuff that you were showing. So I'm just a little nervous when it does get flying what he's going to do with it. But it's been a fun project. Cool stuff.
One last area we maybe should cover when we talk about outdoor, and this is probably one of the first kind of app categories when smartphones came out with cameras and the ability to know what direction they were pointing, are these astronomy apps where you could point your phone at the sky. The phone would give feedback to the app saying, hey, you're pointed in this direction at this angle and you're seeing this constellation, and then provide some really cool overlays and educational content that pops up on the screen that allows a teacher or a student or just you know, anybody who's got the app a real good education on what they're looking at in creation that God put there in the sky. Just some awesome apps. There's probably more apps in this category than anything else right now. Really well done, graphically rich, you know, audio annotations and all kinds of things that you can do with it.
Yep, we have not one but two articles to share that list out some of these apps. Probably one that's popular with everyone is Sky Guide, and it does
and
just what
you said.
A
Sky Guide for kids even too. I mean, they've kind of stratified these by age group too. So,
but there's lots of them listed. If you're looking for one or want to try one out, maybe you want to try it for free for a while. Many of them do have a price tag. This one's $3 for SkyGuide. I saw one that was like $15, and I'm guessing it's that price for a reason, but I don't have particular experience with any of them. So if you do, you can let us know what you use and how you use it.
Yeah, really, this was for many was out of reach because you had to buy a telescope and, you know, all and there's still a need, you know, for that kind of thing. But this is maybe even the poor man's introduction into astronomy before you kind of take that next step. So should we move indoors, guys?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
What happens on those rainy days? Stuff to do inside?
For me, it reminded me of the days that I was leading computer lab at St. John's and Sleepy Eye, and I set up a couple of pages with just fun links, and these were links that were kind of off limits to the students until there was something like a rainy day where we needed to give them some options and things indoors. And nowadays, you could use it even as a station or use it with the Chromebooks with free time and things like that. But I had a couple of pages set up, fun for kids for the K through 2 crowd that isn't heavy into reading yet, and then for the 3 through 8 crowd, all kinds of different museums to explore, educational games, physics-based games, all those kind of things that you can find on the web. So lots of options there, and we'll include a link to that in the show notes. But more specifically, nowadays, you can do a lot of virtual reality things. So we've talked about Google Cardboard before. I could imagine students being able to do some virtual stuff while they're locked up inside on rainy days.
Yeah, Google Cardboard is really a compelling option. And, you know, something, you know, there are a lot of mobile devices out there. And the Google Cardboard itself is just a few bucks. And really makes virtual reality pretty accessible for anybody.
Are there programs where schools can get Google Cardboard for nothing? I think I remembered something like that, but maybe that's not available anymore.
You know, that's a really great question. I should look into that. I know Google had their Expeditions program where they brought everything in for you.
Okay.
That wasn't necessarily.
Maybe that's what I was thinking of too.
That's not necessarily a get it and keep it. It's a they bring somebody in and
right. Very inexpensive, you know, at the very least to get this stuff in. And the apps are across the board. There's some kind of just fun exploration apps, but there's also some very educational apps, especially for virtual field trips and stuff that probably would fit well in a geography. Mm-hmm. Lesson plan, all kinds of things available there. And it wasn't too long ago, Sally, that we did kind of focus on Google mm-hmm. Cardboard and VR in general. But it seems like that is the coolness of the day. All the vendors are bringing out their goggles and kind of investing a lot in this technology, this VR technology. And boy, seems like a great fit if you're stuck indoors.
Definitely. Another great fit and very much in the education space is why not teach a student how to program? If you've got a little extra time on a rainy day, there's lots of websites that you can use to introduce students to programming, perhaps in the format of gaming even, where they can program their own game at sites like Code Combat and GameStar Mechanics. So they spend their time developing a game. They can share it with other students. You can manage it all as teacher on both of these sites with some administrative duties there. Other places to learn about programming are places like Scratch. You mentioned that earlier, Jason. So students can use Scratch to learn programming, very drag and drop style. And I don't have any more open on my computer, but I think there's even more out there, code.org. And Khan Academy has a programming space, lots of those available.
Yep.
So
I think that's probably a pretty good suite of things to choose from, and you can go any direction from those. If you've got other things that maybe you found useful that involve technology either indoors or outdoors that are kind of these nice diversions once in a while, let us know. Go to wellstech.wells.net and leave a comment there or send us an email, wellstech@wells.net. We'd love to know what you have found that's real helpful with the kids to engage them with technology but education in the process. Good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of news in tech, kind of some exciting news in tech if you're in the educational space, one that has to do with Chromebooks.
That's right. Google had their annual developers conference last week, so there was a lot of different tidbits coming out of that Google I/O conference. But the one that was most exciting has to do with Android apps coming to the Chromebook platform. So opening up basically a whole world of possibilities on a very inexpensive computing device. Chromebooks to date have been just web browsers. Now they're going to have the ability to take advantage of all those apps, and there's apps out there for just about everything. I was thinking and doing some reading and realizing that even the Microsoft suite would be available on a Chromebook via the different Microsoft Android apps that are available. So just one example. Maybe there's Photoshop capabilities, and it goes on and on what you'd be able to do on a Chromebook.
Yeah, this is, and I'll let Jason chime in here too, because since we talked with him in previous shows about tablets in the classroom, Android tablets in particular. But the exciting part about this is if you've ever used a Chromebook, basically the tools that you have available are web-based apps. So you go to a website, and whatever the web can do, that's what your Chromebook can do. It's basically a web browser. What now Android apps bring to the table are compiled applications. So an Android app is a downloadable discrete piece of code which can access more things and do more things than most web apps can do. So think of an Android app more as an app that you can run on your computer. There are a number of applications that are challenged to run on the web. I think of Photoshop as an example. So Photoshop is a binary. It's a compiled application that you download, install, and run using the hardware on whatever computing device you're using. Not so good on the web. So now you're bringing these compiled apps, these apps that are more true computer apps, into a Chromebook, which is still the same old Chromebook. I don't think they're doing anything different to the Chromebook, but now you have a whole other suite of tools that are available. And I think for education, I think this covers a lot of gaps that were there before, and Chromebooks were already popular. What do you think, Jason?
Yeah, I was really bummed about a month and a half ago, I heard that Google was discontinuing their Play for Education program.
Right. I remember.
And I was really disappointed, because I was like, oh, they did so many things well and so many things right, and I'm really bummed to see that go away. But then they made this announcement, now I'm happy again. The fact that you can use these apps now on a Chromebook is just that's a game changer right there.
And many of the Chromebooks now are certainly coming down in price, but also including a touch screen, which would be helpful for an Android app of most of the Android apps.
Yeah, exactly. So, I'm looking at my screen. It's not showing up too well. I have a Dell touchscreen Chromebook right here, and my absolutely favorite app anywhere. It's called Explain Everything. Yep. And it just allows you to take pictures in, you can annotate over the screen and all of that kind of stuff. But I can do that right here on my Chromebook now, which is just, like I said, that's a game changer for us anyways, because now... Yeah,
not possible in a web app before.
No.
Now that it's in an Android app. That's also available on the iPad too, which fair competition now at this point.
Correct. Yeah. So, awesome. But for the cost of an iPad, I can get three of these. So
exactly.
Makes life a little bit easier for me. So I'm super excited about that.
Get a keyboard thrown in for free.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Do we have anything else in news and tech?
Nope. I think that's going to do it for this week's news and tech. We should move on then to Wells Now, where we have an announcement about some training that's coming up this summer. Martin, looks like the CMM is the place to be.
Yep, right at the CMM. And what is the date? It's in July sometime.
I have it right here. Let's see. It is July 7th.
July 7th. Two kind of training opportunities available here in Waukesha. We're working closely with Concordia Technology Solutions. Many of you will recognize that name as the makers of Shepherd Staff and also their web-based product called Church 360. They've worked closely with my office to coordinate a day of training for either one. There'll be two separate sessions. For the cost, I think it was like $20, $25, mm-hmm. somewhere in there.
20.
really cheap, just kind of covering, you know, basic costs of snacks and lunch and that kind of stuff. If you can get to Waukesha on July 7th and you use either of those products, I suggest you head on, or we'll put a link in the show notes, but you may want to sign up quickly because we don't have unlimited space for training classes. Our biggest one can seat about 25, and the other one, so we'll kind of pick and choose which one fills up first, I guess. The other one can only seat about 15. So these will be small class sizes and expert, you know, people who've actually are product managers or professional trainers for the products themselves. So this is going to be high-level training and at a very cheap price. And Concordia is doing this because they're having their Synod convention here in Milwaukee, in the Milwaukee area. So they're coordinating having staff up here anyway to come over here and do some training just for Wells and ELS congregations. So take advantage of that.
Great deal. While I'm sharing my screen, I'll make mention that we have a Wells Tech photo challenge going on. Currently, the May challenge is graduation hugs and your confirmation verse. So we're looking for you to share photos that fit those themes and to add to our public domain image library. We've actually accumulated 650 plus photos. I've got some in the queue that I haven't even added yet, but they're great for church and school ministry, and they're all added here gratis. So you can come and download these images and make use of them on your website. You can make image graphics, you know, text graphics, things like that. Use them in presentations or whatever your needs are. Yep. And the reason we have such a great library is because people just like you have contributed images to build it up, and we encourage you to do so. And those that do will be entered in some drawings for some great camera equipment coming up this August when our year-long challenge wraps up. So
yeah, you don't need to be a professional to submit, although there are some very professionally done photos here. We're just looking for, you know, things that apply to the theme, and just give them away because we want to share the goodness there. So, Shall we move on to our picks of the week? And Jason, you as our SRCTC, have the honor of going first.
Nice, I appreciate that. Well, you know, we kind of this is maybe more of a resource or something like that, but
no rules in this segment of the show.
That's
week in and week out.
That's exactly right. So one of my favorite websites recently has been Instructables.com. You can think of it as it's like a Pinterest for makers. So, you know, if you want to find recipes, there's going to be a ton of stuff here. There's science things. There are craft kinds of things. But then there's also a lot of technology kinds of projects that you can do in here, too. So, you know, anything from, you know, you want to make an electric bike charger from a well power supply. Hey, we've got directions for that. Or, hey, a Minecraft or a nightlight. That sounds like a lot of fun, too. So, you know, we've got, there's all kinds of different things on here, and some of these are, you know, here we've got a VR safety helmet. That sounds like it'd be a lot of fun. So many different projects on here. I just saw one today. I think I'm gonna work on it with my son this weekend. They have plans for a PVC movie screen. You know, just take some PVC pipe and make an outdoor movie screen. You set up in your backyard, and you know, costs a couple bucks for the materials, but you know, and it ends up looking really nice. So I'm really excited about this. This is one of my favorite websites. And if you're an educator, I think you can get a free premium account with your education email address. All you have to do is you know, verify a few things, and then you'd be able to download the whole thing as a PDF. You can print it out. You've got your step-by-step guide. So lots of really great stuff on Instructables, one of my favorite sites.
So is the site Instructables.com, I assume?
Instructables.com, that's correct, yep.
Beautiful. Thanks for sharing. Sally.
My turn, and I'm going to talk Google, believe it or not. I recently got an email from a group called EdTech Team, and it made me realize that I'd probably never mentioned edtechteam.com on the show. But basically, these are the people that travel the world giving Google summits, Google Apps for Education summits. And they have a load of great resources here and information shared in their regular email. So you can head over to the site and subscribe. This is an example of one of the emails. And the reason that it really made me smile is because it comes from Molly Schrader, who is their director of summits. Jason, do you know Molly?
I do know Molly, yeah.
I do too. She's actually been on the Wealth Tech podcast before because she spoke at Google Summit at Wisconsin Lutheran College one summer when I was in attendance. And she's world-renowned. She's all over the place teaching all types of educators to use Google Apps for Education. And so, yeah, definitely sign up for their email. One of the things she recommended in that recent email I received was to search on #GAFE Summit, Google Apps for Education Summit, on Twitter to follow that stream of comments, because lots of people are sharing all kinds of cool things they're doing with Google Apps in the education space. So that might be one of the Twitter searches you want to save for the future. And just a quick mention, I think we've mentioned it once at least already on the show, but our friends at WLC are sponsoring a Revolutionizing the Classroom with Google event this summer. It's June 20th through 24th, and it prepares you to take the Google Apps for Education Certified Educator Level 1 or Level 2 exam and become a Google Certified Educator. Their early bird pricing, it says register by May 1st. I think we've missed out on early bird, but I'm guessing they still have room for you if you're interested in attending, and the price seems to be very reasonable. So check that out if you want to learn some Google goodness this summer at Wisconsin Lutheran College.
Yeah, they do that every year, and usually they fill it up. Just an awesome experience. So well worth the time. So, all right, I'm going to try and share my screen for my pick, and it is something I looked. Something in the back of my mind told me I've shared this before. So I went back into the Wells Tech archives and actually found that I did indeed share this in episode 39. Episode back in 2008.
Well,
I did, but it was a long time ago. So this company has been around a long time. It's called Gazelle, and they've added a few features, and that's why it kind of came to mind as a pick this week. Gazelle had been a company where you could sell your technology, and it was a pretty limited set of things that you could sell, and they haven't grown that much on that side. You can sell old cell phones, iPhones, iPads, tablets of different kinds. They will take kind of the major ones, Amazon, Asus, Google, Microsoft, Samsung, Apple computers, and there are some other products like Apple TVs, and they kind of focus on the Apple stuff, but they do, you know, the Android stuff as well. But one thing that they've added recently is the ability to buy stuff, and we have a kind of a mobile lab that I try and keep stocked here with at least some semi-current technology so we can test different apps that we create, not just mobile apps, but even the websites that we build, because we are building some stuff that is going out to the masses, so to speak. And so we need the ability to test on mobile devices. And Gazelle is a place that I've used a couple times now to get a very good price on maybe not the most current technology, but certainly technology that is less than a year old. So, for instance, I just picked up a Samsung Galaxy phone. We were having some problems with the mobile app, and I didn't have a Galaxy phone, and it seemed like that was the phone that was having the most issues. So went to Gazelle and got one for about half the price it would have cost new. So I'm just on the site here, and if you're looking maybe for an iPad, for instance, this might be a good place to go rather than going to Apple and pay full price. Let's say you're looking for an iPad Air 2, which is actually the most current version unless you go the Pro line. They have iPad Air 2s here, and these aren't new. These are lightly used. They recondition them. They certify them. They guarantee them. Much better than, I think, going to a place like eBay and, you know, kind of not knowing exactly what that's going to be like. Gazelle is a name brand company. They back their products. There's a good return policy. So, for instance, if you're looking for, I'm just on the iPad screen here, if you go to the iPad Air 2, 64 gigabyte Wi-Fi model, they're selling that for $359. So it won't be brand new, but they guarantee its usefulness and technology like this, as long as you don't have maybe cracks or those kinds of things, should be fine. If I went to the Apple site for the exact same product, $500. So you're going from $500 to $359, so $150 to $140 savings just by saying I don't necessarily need it shrink-wrapped and in the, you know, the fancy packaging. I've used them a number of times, like I said, for used products, and I've been very pleased with what they've provided. They stand behind it, and there's no sense in paying more than you have to. So if you are looking for something like that, give Gazelle a chance, GAZELLE.com. You can call and talk to people. I mean, this is not just a fly-by-night company. So pretty good stuff here. Sally or Jason, any experience with Gazelle?
I've sold a couple of phones to them, and yep. You know, it's great. They send you the
box. You don't pay postage or anything.
Yep. And then once they verify the condition of everything, they send you a check. It was great.
Yep. And you can get it sent. In fact, if you take Amazon, they pay through Amazon or regular check or PayPal. But if you do Amazon, I think they bump it up by 5 or 10%. So you get
sure do.
That way too. And sometimes with I think in every case that I've sold a phone through them, they don't even want the charger or the original packaging. They just want the phone. Take your SIM card out. Sometimes even don't even send the battery. Just give us the phone and away it goes. So
yep.
Good stuff.
Very good. Let's move on to our featured video of the week.
And this one's just a lot of fun. We're going to file it away in the what do we say, probably promo video, because it was actually done to promote MLC Day. That happened earlier this month. But the creative folks over at Lakeside Lutheran High School, they got together and made a really funny video where they talk about and scream the news of MLC Day all throughout the campus. So check it out. I think you'll smile and enjoy it and have some MLC Day pride even on May 24th or 25th. Great to celebrate our College of Ministry MLC.
Yeah, they did a nice job. Fun to watch. So, Well, that's going to about do it for this show. Next week, kind of a special summer kickoff. And Sally, you're going to be east of the Mississippi,
visiting the Center for Mission Ministry. Lucky girl that I am, coming in to help out with some training for our Christian Giving Office, and that means that I get to be on site and in person in the lovely Center for Mission Ministry video studio. So we'll be sitting side by side, Martin, and looking forward to that. Doesn't happen that often on Wells Tech.
And we're going to be kicking off a summer series. We kind of always do something a little special, a little bit lighter over the summer. We're going to be doing that again, introducing what we're going to be talking about over June, July, and August. Jason, great to be back with the SRCTC. Thank you so much for joining us, bringing your brand to sunshine. Thanks for cleaning up the place back there, too.
Yeah, you know, I knew I had company coming, so I figured I'd give you guys a shot. This is my world right now. So
Jason's world.
Yeah.
It looks like a mad scientist lives there.
By the time you guys invite me back in the fall, maybe I'll have everything figured out. I don't know. We'll see.
we'll take however you want to join the
show.
That's right. You're always welcome. So.
All right. Appreciate
it. Thank you so much, Jason. Thank you, Sally, as well. And thank all you listeners. And we will talk to you next week. God's blessings. Bye-bye.